Welcome to the Big Web Show, your source for everything web that matters. I am your host, Jeffrey Zeltman, and my guest today is Tim Brown of Nice Web Type, Typekit, and a list apart, and other wonderful ventures. Hey, Tim, how are you?
Hi, Jeffrey. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Absolute pleasure. Let's talk about type. We're at one of those things they used to call inflection points. We're at a time when you could really don't have to use Verdana in Georgia, much as we all love them. So give us your sense of where we are and what's working and what still needs to be fixed.
Well, I think where we are right now in terms of web fonts is that the distribution model has changed. Whereas before we had a few core web fonts that a lot of effort was put into these to prepare them well for screen use, and they were distributed to machines all over the place and requested by our websites. Now we have web fonts. You have just a different kind. It's not feasible for foundries to put so much effort into every typeface as Microsoft put into those core web fonts. So what you have as a result are lots of fonts at generally mediocre quality, and foundries are working really hard to improve the quality of web fonts. And on the typographic side of things, you have so much diversity in terms of what we now can use and be confident that our readers will see, that web designers and developers are having, are facing a challenge right now to learn a lot more about typography and make good decisions. That's exciting.
That is exciting. But back up a bit. You say we can be confident. How confident can we be? Where does web type still not work?
Oh, man. It works. I haven't come across a place where it doesn't work. I mean, we occasionally see newer browsers like some versions of Android that aren't very latest that we're seeing now, where we uncover bugs. Fonts don't work in certain situations, but it's usually because of a browser bug. It's not because some browser comes out or version of browser comes out that doesn't have a support for web fonts.
When there's a browser bug, is it for all web fonts, or is it for a particular font because of the way it's named or because of the particular method by which it's being called up in CSS?
Usually it's because the browser doesn't understand web fonts. In some cases, browsers will be particular about the format, the file formats that they'll accept.
Okay.
IE has that whole EOT thing. Until the newer versions, they're now supporting WAF, which is fantastic. We want everybody to support WAF.
As of IE8, is that? Or as of IE9?
9, yeah.
Okay. And the web just took a giant jump a couple of months ago where pretty much anyone who was still using IE6 got bumped off it. And the use went down below 1%. Are most of those people, did they sort of net out at 7, or were they, I think they were bumped up to 8, were they not?
I'm not really sure.
What about creative problems like this? I specify a web font, and it has a particular width to it. Mm-hmm. And a particular, I specify a line height that looks good with that web font, right? Mm-hmm. But the replacement font for a browser that doesn't support web fonts has a different X height and a different, as a result, the different line height, and mm-hmm. the layout really doesn't work. How do you specify things where your fallbacks aren't going to break your design? Because we're sort of in that area that Jeremy Keith calls that area of consensual hallucination now, where we actually believe we have print-like control, and in many cases we do, right? So on many people's machines, we have a set of, or at least within different breakpoints, we have sort of sets of templates in our minds that we can fill very accurately. Mm-hmm. But so we might use a font that excuse me, I have a cold. We might use a font that has a particular, I mean, you know that when you change fonts, letting changes, right? And so how do you, if you're falling back to Helvetica or you're falling back to Georgia, how do you protect against that? Is there, are there conditionals you can write to make, to change your line height according to which fonts you're using, things like that?
Yeah, there are.
Does Typekit do stuff like that? I mean, when you use a service like, and this isn't a commercial for Typekit, but one of the benefits of using a service, right, is that it takes care of a lot of code problems so you don't have to. Does Typekit do things like that?
I've found the benefits of a service to be worth the costs of using a service. I would like to talk about why different fonts have different line heights. I think people are interested in that kind of thing. But also, just to answer your question about how you sort of map to fallback fonts, Typekit and Google worked together on this piece of JavaScript called Web Font Loader a while back, and now I think pretty much every web font service uses this thing. At Typekit, we call them font events because we're serving JavaScript anyway. We just bake this right in. What you can do is use classes, because this, as part of having Typekit in your website, classes are applied. WF-active, WF-inactive, WF-loading on the HTML element. So you can write different styles for whether a font has loaded or is loading or has not loaded. So those are the conditionals.
Wait. Oh, this isn't for transitional. You're not talking about changing the design during transitions. You're saying if for some reason the web font failed, there's a different style sheet there, or a different section of the style sheet kicks into effect.
But both. You can also do something while a font is loading, like, there's actually a few examples of this. Sean McBride wrote a series of blog posts on the Typekit blog about font events. You can find that little link in our sidebar.
I'm just going to type font events in Google, and of course, font events, the Typekit blog, boom.
Okay. And as for choosing fallback fonts that map nicely to the font you intend for people to see, Josh Brewer created a great tool called Fallback with four Fs at the beginning. And it's kind of like a tool that, like Onion Skins, the font that you're serving, and the fallback font underneath it, so you can see exactly how they match up. And he wrote about that on the Typekit blog, so he sort of walks through the whole thing.
Very nice.
I think that's at fallback.com.
Yes, it is. It's fallback.com. At 4Fs, allback.com. It's a brave new word. And there's a bookmarklet. What does the bookmarklet do?
I think it just takes whatever page you're looking at.
Oh, and it shows you what all
the stacks. Yeah.
Wow. All right. I'm going to try that now. I'm going to go to, let's just say Zeldman.com, because I know that URL. and now I'm going to hit the fallback. Oh, it's just telling me ITC Franklin Condensed, Helvetica Noia, Arial, Helvetica Sans Serif. That's what I wrote.
Right.
But, it would be great if I could actually cycle through them.
Again, there's something about the interface lets you see the fallback. Yeah.
Does it?
Yeah. I forget. I haven't loaded it in a while, so I'm not sure where those buttons are, but it's up there, top right corner.
Web font? Both. Fallback. Update. You know what? This just shows that I should never do this live. I have no idea. There's three buttons, and I'm mystified. So, when it's me, I blame myself, but otherwise, I blame the designer. Anyway, it looks like an intriguing tool.
It's useful.
Fallback. It looks like it's going to be useful as soon as I figure out what these couple of buttons do. But yeah, it would be great to actually watch the stack and make sure that your layout holds up. Let's back up a little bit. You were in college, 10 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And And your first web design job was in for the school itself?
Well, I worked at the publications office doing print stuff, you know, Quark and whatnot, and I found your book, Taking Your Talent to the Web, on the shelf. And, you know, that book was written for print people who wanted to transition to web stuff, so it really made sense for me at the time. I had gotten the print basics down enough that I could do a competent job part-time. And so I took your book, and my parents-in-law put me up over the summer, and I was reading, you know, page by page, sort of making things and learning the web. That book was super useful.
Thank you.
The way I always explain to people is a lot of books are great references. This book was like having a friend who knew so much about the web and would tell you everything about it. And I wish there was a current version of this book, you know, because I feel like people still need that kind of, I mean, it's great to have that kind of personable introduction to the web.
Well, to return the compliment, a nice web type has a similar function today. Nice web type is like a friend that understands more about type than I do.
I appreciate that.
And is willing to take me by the hand. So for those not aware, Tim's principal site is Nice Web Type, and it's nicewebtype.com. And you have a nice mixture between taking a leadership position in all this, sort of being ahead of everyone else to some extent, but also just explaining all kinds of how design basics and web basics work together. You created a web font specimen for Listapart mm-hmm. like 2 or 3 years ago, mm-hmm. this is before you worked at Typekit, or just as you were hired at Typekit. And for a lot of web designers, that was the first time they'd seen a font specimen book for the web. I mean, really, it didn't exist. It was a very simple thing. You translated it, and it's fantastic. And it was a way of saying, okay, you're going to actually try these things on your page. This is how they look, and this is what you can do with them. Because the tools haven't been there for web designers, have they?
No, and that's actually why I'm super excited to be a part of Typekit. You know, web fonts were so new, and we've always talked about, we as an industry have talked about Typekit and FontDeck and WebType and similar services as web font services, right? Mm-hmm. But I think, I don't know, for me, Typekit has always been not so much a place where you go to get fonts to use. It's where you go to use the fonts. It's a typography service, not so much a web font service. And I just feel awesome about being part of Adobe now, because Adobe makes, I like the way John Gruber put it, best of breed industry standard tools. And
they must love you at Adobe. Oh, they must love you at Adobe.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a fair share of the usual corporate bureaucracy, but they invented PostScript. I mean, these are really smart people. Right. And I think that what they've been doing that I've heard about in recent, you know, since the acquisition, it makes a lot of sense to me. So I'm as eager as everyone else to see where we go.
Without getting into secrets, what kinds of things are you talking about that they're doing that you're excited about?
Well, I mean, it's not. I mean, this is public knowledge, but they're working on those touch apps, right?
Right.
So, Adobe Ideas has been one of my favorites, and I haven't tried the others yet, but I saw some demos. And I mean, the specifics of those apps aside, the fact that they're thinking about small focused tools is really, I think that's awesome, because I feel like that's, you know, everybody talks about a web design tool. And I don't think it's going to be like a Dreamweaver, you know, here's where you do web design. I think it's going to be a suite of very small focused tools for doing specific jobs, like a toolbox or, like, you know, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Like we already do in a way when we say, okay, I've got this plugin in my browser that helps me quickly analyze, you know, see a line of code, click on an element and identify the line of code that created that element.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that kind of thing. Adobe is working on tools, though, that would be kind of like, I mean, they do have a Dreamweaver-like. They might, I've heard, have a product in the works that was Dreamweaver-like, but written for a time of responsive design, shall we say, and a product that might live in the cloud, perhaps. So I do think they're coming closer to that. I think you and I would agree that real web design has to be done by hand for the most part. It's just, it's still too complex. It's not like page design. See, the mythology is that, if we can do pages in an Adobe tool and not know anything about code, we shouldn't have to know anything about code to make web pages either. I don't think that's, I think you and I would agree that that's nonsense, that yes, you can make you could make a page that works, but it would be a terrible page.
Mm-hmm. The notion of pages is a little bit problematic. I think a phrase I've heard, and as far back as I can see this mentioned, was in an article Simon Collison wrote called The Articulate Web Designer Tomorrow in 2010 for 24 Ways. I'll put that in the notes for you. But we're designing systems, not pages. I've heard a lot of people say that. I think that...
You're right. The content strategy community and the responsive design community are sort of meeting on that ground. There's also, they just talk about content being everywhere, mm-hmm. or being where it's the right content being where it's supposed to be. So we're not pages anymore. I'm just old. I like to talk about web pages, but you're absolutely right.
It's useful, and that's what makes it work. We have words to describe that, and if you say pages, I know what you mean. And we don't have those same words for talking about responsive design.
Well, chunks. Karen McGrady started calling them chunks.
Chunks. That's good.
Although that could also be what you're when your designer partied too much the night before.
I've been calling things clusters, and I don't know if that's right either.
There's a negative with that too. Although you're probably too nice a young man to know that word.
Uh oh. No, but that's what you have to think of, right? You have to sort of think about an experience in its entire continuum, any device that could access it, in very low fidelity, and then think about those very specific clusters or chunks in high fidelity. I feel like that's to be able to work in a multifocal way like that is. Mm-hmm. What web design is, as we're becoming to, we're coming to realize.
You also have probably read Orbital Content by Cameron Cozen.
Yes, that was awesome for A List Apart.
Right. Typography, though, if we're designing chunks or orbital modules or whatever it is, if we're not designing, the typography becomes just that much more important, right?
That's what I think. I mean, when you have this diversity of devices that you can no longer rely on canvas dimensions, then the only structural constant you have left is type.
Have you seen the readability app? It just came out today.
I haven't. I heard a lot about it.
But Jonathan Heffler's font's in it.
Nice.
It is. It's a very nice reading experience. What happens... So here on the one hand, we have designers working with tools like provided by Typekit, WebType, FontDeck, type shops that are working really hard to hint their fonts for all the new screen resolutions and really make fonts that work beautifully on the screen. And they're really trying to make beautiful, readable, not just legible, but readable experiences. On web pages or web modules or whatever it is that we're talking about. But on the other hand, you have Instapaper and now readability with these beautiful Heffler fonts basically coming along and saying, you know what? If the designer screwed up, it really doesn't matter because we can liberate the content from that outdated context anyway. Here's the content the way you want to read it, and we're making it look like an ebook. As a designer, how do you feel about, do you have mixed feelings about where we are, or do you think it's all great?
I have mixed feelings. I would like to see applications like Instapaper invite designers to style text in a more simple way, so that you could maybe add a style sheet to your site for those sort of simplified reading experiences, but still, you know, choose the typeface that works for your content and make, you know, decisions about how it's set. Because that, I mean, that's a big part of branding and graphic design at all. I mean, you designers are hired for a reason, and part of that is to shape the reading experience.
Right. So if we're designing, a reading experience for the desktop and a, you know, and taking into account how do we want this design to change on a really big desktop, and taking into account what happens on a netbook, thinking about phones or other small devices, if we're doing all that and still trying to create a branded experience, and yet readers are being encouraged to just read our content in readability, is that a, are our jobs in danger? Is that a bad thing, or should we
no.
be working with? Okay,
it's not a bad thing. I mean, it's convenient. I use Instapaper all the time, and it should be convenient. People should be able to declutter a layout, even a very carefully considered layout. But there should be a way for some of that design aesthetic, that reading aesthetic, to come with the content. I mean, people should have a choice too. If they like Instapaper to sort of homogenize everything, then that's great. They should be able to read things that way. But it would be nice if some of the reading experience was customized.
Who's doing this well right now? Who's designing beautiful reading experiences online, in your opinion?
Well, I've always been sort of awful at finding good examples, but the Typekit blog has this Sites We Like feature every Friday, and everything I see there is fantastic.
Aren't those just our customers?
Those are Typekit customers, and some of the other services have galleries of things being used. I know FontDeck has one. I think WebType has one. Typotech, they're a foundry who offers their own service. They have a gallery of websites using their fonts. Anywhere you can find that stuff. When you see web fonts in use, fonts in use. Fontsinuse.com has a whole category of web fonts. So you can look at that stuff too. That's a fantastic resource. Stephen Coles, Nick Sherman, Indra Kupferschmidt, and Sam Berlow together.
Did you see, when you were here, Nick's here?
Oh, yeah.
Nick shares the studio.
Yeah, Nick is awesome. I've seen him a few times.
He's awesome, and Fonts and Use is an amazing site. I agree. What are some of your favorite web fonts now, and what, if I wanted to, so, for example, if I wanted to, much as we all love Verdana, if I wanted to replace Verdana on my site, what's an easy, no-brainer, wonderful, readable substitute, in your opinion?
Well, when you start to change a font like that, I mean, immediately you'll see that it feels very different from Verdana. There aren't a whole lot of typefaces just like Verdana, but you have the popular Proxima Nova.
Right.
There's Tim Ahrens's Facet Web. Which has
Facet
gone?
Facet Web.
Yeah, Facet Web.
See, I don't.
It's
don't know that.
It's an awesome sans serif, stocky enough that it doesn't ever break down and renders well at small sizes.
It's a terrible name. No offense, this gentleman, but I'm Googling it and I keep getting the many facets of fonts, the many facets of web design.
How
to make a faceted classification and put it on the web.
Sure.
This is like the App Media conference used to have this problem where you'd look up App Media and you'd get somebody's style sheet. You could never find the conference because of the name.
We can link it up in the notes, but it's spelled F-A-C-I-T.
Oh, wait. Facet font, Facite. From My Fonts, the same people who sponsor Fonts in Use. Oh, this is lovely.
Fonts. Nick Sherman had a lot to do with My Fonts, too.
Right. We should have Nick on the show.
You should.
I know. We will. This is beautiful. He calls it Facite. He pronounces it Facite.
Yeah. Yeah, Tim Ahrens has a bunch of good stuff. And he actually works for us at Typekit. He was one of our Foundry partners. And in talking with him, as happens so often with our Foundry partners, that's part of my job is to talk with them about bringing their fonts to the web and working through any customer support issues that come up that have to do with the font files. And I would talk with Tim about things like rendering and file formats, and he knew so much and was teaching me so much that we asked him to join the team, and he's been doing an awesome job for us.
I mean, most people, when they go to their job, they feel like their job is, holding them back. Many people in our business have jobs that they feel are holding them back. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that's the case with you. I would say that you're sort of in the cusp of working with really smart people who are solving one of the most exciting problems on, if the internet is the new printing press, or it's the internet, it's something even newer, you're solving type. You're with a company that's solving type. That's pretty amazing.
It is amazing, and the people I work with are amazing. I jump up out of bed every morning, and I never take it for granted for a day that I have this opportunity to participate in what's going on right now and to help other people understand what we understand.
What are some good resources for people who have found their way to being talented designers, but they started on the web, they don't have a traditional background, and they don't know about things like font pairing or measure? Mm-hmm. Or where are some places they can go to sort of put these skills together?
Well, not to plug the Typekit blog again, but we do work hard to introduce folks who know a lot about the web and not as much about typography to the options that they now have. There are also a couple of books I know about that are coming out soon. Jason Santamaria is writing for a book apart on web typography, and Mark Bolton has a book coming on grid systems for the web. So those two things, I'm sure, will give you a good foundation for how to use type. It's what I try and do with Nice Web Type. Not only talk through sort of what's going on as I understand it, but even very basic things. You said before that it has a tone that's similar to taking your talent to the web, and thank you for that. I appreciate that. And it's
sure.
The tone of voice you took with that writing was inspirational to me. I feel like I want to be that for people, if I can be. I want to help folks understand what I understand, and I'm not afraid to be wrong. I think that's part of what makes Nice Web Type successful, is that I'm just explaining things as I understand them, and if I'm wrong, then that's fine. I'm happy to be corrected, and I'm happy that we're all sort of learning about this stuff together.
One of the wonderful things about the web community is that everybody's kind of on the same level and that everybody helps each other. I used to do these things, I don't know if you remember, called, not Designing Out Loud, what was it, Designing in Public? And I would redesign my site in HTML, right, in CSS. I would redesign it in code. I mean, obviously I would have sketched something beforehand, but... Mm-hmm. But I was really just figuring it out in code, and I used to make mistakes, or I'd say, oh, this seems to, this seems to be a really good way to do, doesn't matter, image replacement, whatever it happened to be. And people would say, yeah, that's not really working in Opera, but have you tried this? So it was great. I would get, especially if you work alone, which at the time that I was doing that, HappyCog was just me. It's now, of course, a mighty empire, but it was just me. And it was really great to feel like you had this virtual studio full of people willing to help. And everybody does this for everybody. I mean, people, that's what we do.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty great that, you could be a college student and you could be sending a tip to, you know, the equivalent of a Milton Glaser, right? That's how it works. It's a pretty flat, there's no real hierarchy. We're all just designers, web designers, just trying to make a better tomorrow.
Yep.
You've done some speaking, right? Not very much, though. You were at Build in Ireland?
Yeah, I was at Build in 2010.
Well, I see you have, I know you have a video on it. What was Build like? And do you want to do more speaking?
Yes, I want to do more speaking. That was very satisfying to me. Build was amazing. Andy McMillan is doing a fantastic job with that conference. It's been going on for 3 years now, and he took care of everything for me. I mean, he invited me to the conference, and really, you know, I didn't have to worry about anything. And he talked to me about sort of what the audience there is like and what they'd want to hear. He planned sort of a week long. I think right now it's like a 5-day thing where you get there, and the conference is only one day, but there are pre and post events. And talking with folks there has been was as rewarding as the speaking. When I was there, I gave that talk on a Wednesday, and some folks in the audience in Belfast are from a web agency called Design by Front, and these are the guys who are now making Typecast. It didn't exist at the time, but after my Build talk, I went back to their offices. They invited me over, and we talked about, you know, what it means to make websites starting from type as your building block. And I'm really happy with what they're doing with Typecast. I think that's fantastic, and I think it's the right way to start working in high fidelity.
BetaTypecastApp.com,
yeah,
is the name of that. Design with web fonts in the browser. How is that different than what you can do with Typekit? Or
it's kind of like their entire app is like the type tester tab on Typekit. But what you can do with their app is use fonts from different web font services, for one thing.
Existing site.
You don't really use it on your site. You sort of use it in their app. They have. They don't have. What I like about it, two major things that I really like about Typecast. One is there's no architecture. You're basically in there. You set up a single column of type. You typeset it with different elements, and that's it. And you can make multiple columns, but it's not like you're making a composition and you're not planning pages in a site. You know, it's not like you're wireframing or comping or anything. It's like in between that stuff.
Right.
We don't have tools that do that for us yet. Typecast is something that's trying to tackle that. The other thing they do is one of the outputs of the tool is a style guide, which I think is a really interesting output for a tool. I wrote a short blog post linking to Samantha Warren's blog post from April or something.
About tiles?
Style tiles, yeah. Right. I mean, what a great way to talk through with clients or colleagues the goals for a particular design without getting into specifics that tie you down or cause misconceptions.
That's at badassideas.com, by the way, which is Samantha Warren's website.
Yeah.
We're going to have so many links.
Oh, yeah. I have a bunch we haven't even talked about. So
okay.
I'll stick those in there, too, just so okay. People have more reading material.
Okay. Right, but so her style tiles were a way of kind of like her answer to a mood board.
Yeah.
Right.
How
do they solve? What problem do they solve?
They help people talk. I don't really remember her post entirely, but what the purpose of using these style tiles is to have things to talk about with your clients. And it's more, I think it's more articulate than a mood board is how she puts it. But that's what it's about, right? It's about communication, clear communication. That's why I had a conversation with Dan Mall yesterday, and we talked about responsive design and how that's difficult. We were both Skyping into the responsive summit thing that Chris Armstrong and Josh Brewer put together last week. And so Dan and I wanted to follow up with one another. We were talking about this, and it's everyone who sort of attempts responsive design finds himself in this situation if they're lucky enough to be working with someone else who sort of complements their skills, where you're trying to explain to one another what it is you're trying to make. And it's a lot of iteration. It's painstaking work. And I think that the reason it's difficult right now is because we don't have the words like pages from earlier in this conversation, right? We don't have a lot of the words that we need to just zap an idea from one of our minds to the other.
You wrote recently about molten leading.
Yeah.
Which was another attempt to sort of make language for something.
Definitely.
Which I think is what I was trying to get at a while ago, where line height changes depending upon the font, and that changes the whole structure of the design, especially if you have a really tight design that's based on type.
Yeah. Well, so line height can change from font to font because fonts have different mathematics inside them, and the way font math maps to CSS math is something that, you know, you need to unpack a little bit. Molten leading is something that applies it's more about typesetting, right? Because a traditional rule in typesetting is that when you have a narrow column, you can tighten up the line height a little bit. And when you have a very wide column, you want lines to be spaced more loosely because it helps the eye catch the next line as you go and read through it. But on the web, we have the min and max width. That helps our paragraphs, you know, become wider or more narrow within certain limits that look good. But nothing adjusts the line height. Line height is not a range in the same way that min and max width provide a range for width. And so that's what molten leading is about. It was just an idea of mine. I didn't actually make anything.
Right.
But Matt Marquis and there was one other. There are two tools in that post I wrote linked right from the top. These guys just made jQuery plugins that do this.
Right, so, Matt Marquis and Jim Jeffers.
Jim Jeffers, yes. I'm sorry, I forgot that, Jim.
This is incredible. And they just banged this out in response to your idea.
Yeah, it's not quite my idea. I feel like a lot of people are having ideas at the same time right now.
Yes.
And I'm sure that people thought about this in addition. I think Matt, in his GitHub README, talks about having had this idea too. And my post is what made him feel like, you know, the initiative to actually make it real. It had probably been stewing in his mind for a while. And that's, you know, lots of people have ideas. So that's one of the things that excites me about Nice Web Type is that, you know, I don't have to be the one having the ideas. But if I sort of talk about things as I understand them, that might give other people ideas or give them the initiative to make something real that they otherwise wouldn't have.
Again, I identify with you, my brother. I feel exactly the same way. Sometimes I've invented something. More often I've just said, this seems like a problem someone smarter than me should solve. And they do.
Yeah.
So, and there's great value to all of it. You are a dribbler.
Dribblers. Oh, what a fantastic! I don't even remember what I did before Dribbble. It's just an incredible service, and I especially when I hear about people being found through Dribbble for their jobs, discovered for their design talent. Dan Cederholm's doing some special stuff with that.
Well, right. So for people, anyone listening to this podcast is familiar with Dribbble, but if you're not. Dribbble with 3 B's is a place where designers share tiny snapshots, tiny thumbnails of what they're working on. It's small enough that you're not revealing the whole thing, so it's kind of a tease, but also this protects your client, right? You're not showing a whole layout for something a client hasn't approved yet, but you are showing a piece, and it might be an interface element, or it might be just a piece of an illustration, but it's a really wonderful way to showcase the detail people put into their work. And it also, it's amazing how these little 400 by 300 things, the amount of personality people pound into these things and how, you know, different people, I mean, it's unmistakable. Right.
Hey, actually, go ahead. If I could use that to talk about something slightly different.
Go ahead.
I don't mean to. One of my wife's first graders, my wife's a first grade teacher, said to her once, you know, speaking of my dog, they weren't actually talking about his dog, but so sorry to interrupt you, but the fact that there is.
I love that. Did you hear a gun? Was that a gun? Oh, no, I guess nobody fired a gun. Speaking of guns, though.
But the limited amount of room you have to work with on Dribbble, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that people have to make a conscious choice about cropping what it is right. they're showing you is that form of editing that establishes a voice for people. And I feel like that is a very approachable way that I was successful with Nice Web Type. At the time, I started really thinking about wanting this to be, because it was my BFA thesis, but I wanted to do something more with it. What I really wanted to do was make Robert Bringhurst's book for the web. And Rich Rutter did that. If anybody hasn't seen webtypography.net, go check that out. But, that was what I was hoping to do. But I realized that that's not really what made me happy. And I was reading a lot of stuff on the web. I know I was very in tune with everything anybody I could find was saying about web typography. But I didn't feel like I had any authority to contribute to that conversation. And so there's like an element of fear involved in that. But I didn't feel ready to start a blog. Then I heard you talking about Magnolia. And I started bookmarking all that stuff I was reading. And then Magnolia came out with groups. So I made a Nice Web Type group so that people could follow what I was bookmarking. And then I started taking the description field of those bookmarks and excerpting parts of what I was bookmarking. And that excerpting is an editing process in the same way that cropping a Dribbble shot is, right? And you craft a voice that way. That's an easy way to start having an opinion, establishing yourself without having to write about things. Just point to what other people are doing.
Oh, my goodness. Could you just be my guest every week? That is brilliant. Yes. Well, if you're uncomfortable writing, if you don't know how to start blogging, if you don't know how to create your voice, what a brilliant idea. By excerpting from what other people are doing, what you choose to excerpt and how you fit it into a small container, that can get you to start writing. It's funny, too. Thank you. That's wonderful. That's wonderful advice. I think Twitter gives you a different voice. Also, then me on Twitter is different than me on Zelman.com, on A List Apart, on Facebook, in person. I should add in person because I sometimes say I'm in person. But me on Twitter is a different being, right? Yeah.
You have to sort of learn the rules of each network you participate in
So Merlin Mann, if you actually have a meal with Merlin Mann, it's exhausting because he's so brilliant. And all over the place in ADD, and he's just like this genius, 10 times smarter than you, making like 16 layers of jokes at the same time. And you're like, this is really entertaining, and now I need to sleep. My brain hurts. But on Twitter, he's wonderful because it's like the tiniest dose of Merlin. It's like a drop of LSD, right? Instead of like a big gallon of LSD, right? So instead of like going out and killing families for Charles Manson, which is what happens when you take too much LSD, you just have this, this is going in a really bad place. And Merlin, I apologize. And I apologize to Charles Manson also for that matter. I mean, that just went, I don't know where that was going, but I think.
Well, every tweet that I've seen of Merlin's has been hilarious.
Pure genius. He did one, what was it? It was, turns out. So it turns out. Then there was like a three carriage returns. Then turns out was a hashtag. And then there was a hashtag that said hashtag. And it seemed like he'd completely deconstructed A, Twitter, and B, a certain kind of joke telling on Twitter by a certain hack level of comedian. And C, he deconstructed every bad speaker you've ever seen at a presentation.
Yeah,
with
I think
like
I remember
eight
that.
Words, eight words. And I'm just like, of course, again, this could be the LSD talking. I don't know. But that, to me, that's what he had done. with just a few words. And I thought, that's art. This guy's using Twitter to make art.
Yeah, some people are really good at Twitter. I actually wrote a post on Nice Web Type in 2009 about how I use Twitter. I can link that up for the notes. But it's, I mean, I don't, I'm not funny, but I have these like just personal rules for using Twitter, and they seem to have paid off. I get, you know, people listening to me, and that is that all I'm trying to do with a Twitter account is. With Nice Web Type's Twitter account, I should be specific, is share what's interesting, stay on topic as much as I can, listen to people, and try not to be annoying. And that's basically what that post I wrote boils down to. And that's, I mean, if sometimes people will share really awesome stuff, but I can't follow them on Twitter because they're just, they're posting too much. And other times people... post a lot of stuff that's personal mixed in with the stuff that's more work-related. And so I feel like everybody has to find that balance for themselves.
I'm speechless. You give me so much to think about, including am I posting too much? But I can't post too much podcast. We're unfortunately, sadly, running out of time. I'd love to have you come on the show again.
And, I would love to be on again.
And talk about other stuff. You're a really bright guy, and you're making a difference on the web. And it's a real pleasure to know you. And if folks want to learn more about you, they can go to nicewebtype.com. They can also follow you on Twitter at twitter.com/nicewebtype. They can also find your entries on blog.typekit.com, and we'll be posting this and a whole lot of links very soon at 5x5 TV. Thanks for your time today, Tim.
Thank you, Jeffrey. I really appreciate this.
Have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Bye-bye.